and in Europe right now is Ken Timmerman. He's the man that covers geopolitical activities for us. He's gone to Europe to do some writing. He's trying to finish up a book he's working on. He's promised to give us an interview when it's finished to find all about it. But, of course, right now everything's very secretive. I can understand that. I've written some books, and I don't want somebody stealing my glory before I get the book written. But, Ken, I'm thanking you for taking a break in your writing. This was probably just a bit of a blessing to be able to put that pen down or get away from that computer. And let's talk about some geopolitical activities. In fact, first of all, let's talk about last time we had a conversation, the Geneva talks were still going on between the P5 plus one and the Iranian officials in charge of the nuclear program there in Iran. The thing came to a dead stop. It looks like they may try to get it back together in Geneva in a couple of days. But the report has been coming out that France was the one who really scuttled these talks. Now, is that the case, number one, and why did they do it if they did scuttle it?
Yes, the French did scuttle the talks. God bless them. It was an extraordinary event to witness. The French foreign minister, Laurent Fabius, went out on Saturday morning onto French national radio and said basically the talks were a non-starter, because on the Western side, the offer was being put forward that the United States and its allies would essentially lift sanctions against Iran for all of the sanctions on the banking sector and on the foreign currency transactions and frozen assets around the world. And in exchange for that, Iran would do nothing. And Fabio said, you know, that's not really acceptable. The Iranians are continuing to enrich uranium to 5% and to 20%, and there's no curb put on that. There's no limit put on that. And he said even more disconcerting is the program to build a plutonium production reactor at Arak, which is close to the Iraqi border, which is essentially a bomb plant. Both of those programs would be able to go ahead unfettered while we would be lifting sanctions. And Laurent Fabius, the French foreign minister, essentially was the little boy in the crowd who cried out, "The emperor's naked."
Wow. Well, indeed, as you said, praise the Lord, they did scuttle those talks. Do you think they're going to get back on track?
Well, that's entirely possible. They're scheduled to meet again on the 20th. Secretary Kerry has been traveling the world trying to knock heads together and get people to see it his way. I'm not quite sure what his way is. He seems to think that by making nice to the Iranian regime, they're going to somehow make nice in return. And we've seen over the past 20 years from their behavior, that's simply not going to happen. You know, we talk about carrots and sticks, and I like to say the Iranians eat all the carrots that we offer them. They burp, and they don't even say thank you. And that's what we're going to see here again.
You are so picturesque with your wording. That's a writer speaking there for sure. I'm positive. Well, what about a report that I have been able to get a hold of that says President Obama has already started lifting some of the sanctions against Iran? He never went to the Congress to get approval on that. What do you know about that story?
Well, that's correct. And in fact, he did not need to go to Congress legally, because the sanctions are governed by two things. Number one, there are laws that get passed by Congress, and they essentially empower the Treasury Department to then write regulations, specific regulations, to implement them. And what Obama has done is essentially gone to Treasury and said, look, in those regulations, I want you to walk back as far as possible the letter of the law. So we do not impose new sanctions. We do not designate new Iranian entities, which is part of the sanctions process. Treasury has a very active investigative arm that looks into Iranian government money laundering, their illicit oil sales, and other financial activities around the world that are in violation of the sanctions. And so they out the companies and the individuals who are involved in these transactions. And now, on instructions from the White House, they've stopped doing that. So that's what you're hearing about. It is a very real thing, and the Iranians have seen it happen. They're very thankful for that, because, again, they haven't done anything, and they've not made any offers. They're glad it's happened, but they've not made any counteroffers to the United States or to the Western powers. They haven't said we're going to suspend uranium enrichment. They haven't said we're going to stop this plutonium production plant. They've done nothing.
Wow. Well, that's the situation right now. And the 20th, they are supposedly to resume those Geneva talks. Let's take another focus for a few moments. Looks like the Russians have landed in Egypt. There's a conversation going on. When the United States decided to cut off all foreign aid to Egypt, it really irritated the Egyptian leadership, and the Russians decided, hey, we'll fill that vacuum. So they're in there having some very historic and very important conversations, and it looks like there may be a vacuum filled by the Russians instead of the United States.
Right. You know, the only way you can win a chess match if you're very stupid is to be playing against somebody who's even more stupid than you are. And unfortunately, the Russians are a great deal smarter than our current administration is, and the Egyptians are a great deal smarter than our current administration. So when the United States essentially abandons the territory in Egypt and in elsewhere around the Middle East as well, the Russians quite naturally step in, and I can't blame them for doing it. I have no love lost for Vladimir Putin, who is a wannabe dictator and who violently represses criticism of his regime at home, and he does not wish us well around the world. But he's looking after Russia's interests, and he's doing it in a way which, frankly, does not harm the United States in the long run. In a way, it may help us, the same way that he helped us in Syria by helping President Obama to get out of a very difficult situation that he painted himself into a corner over Syria's alleged chemical weapons use, and Putin gave him a way out. Well, now the Obama administration has painted itself again into a corner, this time with Egypt, by cutting off aid, which was a foolish thing to do. And the Egyptians had come to rely on United States weaponry over the past 30 years. And so Putin said, okay, I'll step in and do what I can to help out. Will this mean a long-term strategic shift towards Russia? It remains to be seen. What it does mean in the immediate future is that the Egyptians and perhaps others in the Middle East will see that they have an alternative to American fecklessness and American weakness, which unfortunately, with this current administration, has become the norm.
And you said others in the Middle East may be interested in this move as well. I know Vladimir Putin made a call to the Saudi king. Could Saudi Arabia be the next ally that the United States loses in the Middle East?
Well, the Saudis are already making noises that they will turn both to France, which they've done in the past for weapons, and to Russia for weapons and for other types of assistance. They've said, as we discussed last week, that they would turn to Pakistan for nuclear weapons. So the Saudis live just across a very, very narrow body of water, the Persian Gulf, from the Islamic Republic of Iran. They see what the Iranians are doing. They see their nuclear weapons program, and they see that the United States is doing nothing about it and just retreating, retreating, retreating. And so the Saudis are looking for protection. Who do they go to when the United States is not around? Well, they go to Russia.
So that may be the case in another Middle Eastern country. About 30 seconds, if you will, Ken. Looks like the rebels over there in Syria, and we've been watching that situation going on, trying to bring down Bashar Assad. But it looks like they're getting tough with the United States, saying we're going to fly an Islamic flag over the White House soon.
Well, you know, the United States has been behaving over the past 3 years since the Arab Spring began, really, as if it were a regional power in the Middle East, not a superpower, but a regional power in the Middle East. In other words, as if we were the equivalent of Tunisia or Egypt or eventually Saudi Arabia, Qatar, places like that. I guess this coincides with President Obama's sense that America is not an exceptional nation. But what's happened is that we have degraded our own power, and groups like the Nusra Front or the Islamists in Syria, they see us as a minor bit player. They can thumb their noses at us. They can say, we will fly the Islamic flag over the White House, and you will do nothing. And the truth is, they're right. We will do nothing.
And we'll keep covering that story with Ken Timmerman, watching as the United States continues to do nothing, as he said. Ken, thank you so very much. Have a good time there in Europe. Finish up that book for us quickly, and we'll talk again real soon.
Okay, thank you, Jimmy, and God bless.